Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom, the Detroit Lions podcast here at MLive. Joined as always by Ben Raven. I'm Kyle Meinke, Lions beat here at MLive. And Ben, we got a nice guest lined up for today, and I'm really excited to get to this interview. I had a chance to catch up last week coming off the practice field with Ray Agnew, assistant GM for the Lions, and one of the key evaluators. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, he was one of the guys who was in on that evaluation when St. Brown was at college. And obviously he has blown up, to say the least. So excited to get to him in a bit, a little perspective on how that guy fell so far in the draft and what's making him so good now. So it'd be great to get to that. First, of course, got to break down last Sunday, and it was a disappointment. Lions are 1-2. I mean, the win against Washington was so convincing, and they go into Minnesota and they did a lot of the same stuff, probably more issues on defense, but they still took a 14-point lead and they took a 10-point lead in the second half and just couldn't hold on, Ben. A real disappointment, a real missed opportunity. I mean, it's not every day you get a chance to go up double digits on a divisional foe on the road. I mean, they haven't won a divisional game in 11 games now, right? So curious your perspective on that game, Ben, and we got to talk about the decision to kick that 54-yard field goal, which obviously backfired. Your perspective on all that?
Yeah, I thought I was about to see my first divisional win for the Lions since I joined the beat. But obviously, just I love Dan Campbell's aggressiveness. I've never been shy about that. But it was his kind of inconsistency in that aggressiveness, and not just kicking that final field goal, but just kind of not matching their time management when they shifted to conservative play calling and running the ball late in the fourth quarter. Kind of left a lot of play clock on the board, you know, and that's not necessarily how I would try to close out a game, but I mean, they just didn't match up their time management with kind of their shift in play calling. And then the final kick, I mean, Seibert had missed one earlier. That 54-yarder would have been a career long for him. And I think everybody on the face of the earth thought they were going to go for it there or at least pooch it down. And it just, I mean, that was a different level of just finding ways to lose right there. And Kirk Cousins, boom, back-to-back. First, the only two 20-yard plays of the game for the Vikings come on that final drive back-to-back. And it's just like, holy crap. And it was just very uncharacteristic. And it just shows Dan Campbell is still trying to find that balance, you know, his aggressive side and what he feels he should do. And I mean, what do you think? You were in that building. I mean, what was the tone shift in that building? Because back home for me, it felt like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a nice little convincing division road win for this team right here up until about 5 minutes left in that game.
Here's the thing about second guessing play calling. It's the easiest thing to do. It's cherry picking. And most of the time I hate it because you have the benefit of hindsight. And it's easy to say, well, it didn't work, so you shouldn't have done it. It's regressive. It's regressive thinking, and it is what it is. But the field goal is not that kind of thing. In the moment, you're thinking to yourself, wait, what? Are they really going to try for that? And I'm not sure how much it played on TV, but I know in the building, because we're sitting in the press box, kind of like in the corner of one of the end zones, facing toward those giant doors that were open because it was a really nice day in Minneapolis. So we're like, the stadium is opening up on the far side of the field is the side of the field where that field goal was being attempted. That's the same side of the field where Minnesota already missed twice badly, pushing it wide right. And so contextually, and again, I'm not sure how much you could sense that on TV, but like live in the stadium, you already knew there's a problem going on with like some kind of draft or something. And then they're sending this guy out there. And he did have a better leg than Riley Patterson in camp, no doubt. But he's not a bomber. They let Matt Prater go. They don't have Matt Prater anymore. And to send Austin Seibert out there for what would have been a career-long field goal when he hadn't made a 50-yarder since like his first year in the league, in that moment at that spot on the field. I mean, if he misses that, they get the ball to 44. And that's the risk you're going to take, with the upside only being stretching the lead from 3-6 against a team that was killing your secondary. You're already without Tracy Walker. Like, every decision's risk and reward. And that risk reward on that play call made no sense to me in the moment. Certainly when juxtaposed with the strategy that got them there, which was go for the jugular. Go, like, they're playing four down football, and I love it. And that's what Dan Campbell's wanted to do since he took over. He set an NFL record last year in his first year as a head coach with fourth down attempts, and it was with a shitty offense. And they come out here with a better offense, the at that time, second highest scoring offense in the league in Minnesota. They're playing four down ball. I thought it was the right approach, given their personnel, their head coach, their culture, what they're trying to build, the mindset they're trying to have, not to mention the defense and the issues on that side of the ball. And then you get to crunch time. You get to the time when good teams separate themselves. They make the plays to win the games. And the Lions took the plays that had been making them win that game and threw it in the trash can and sent their kicker out there to attempt a field goal he had never made in his life before into an end zone where they were having problems all game. It just didn't make sense to me. And I mean, Campbell like didn't even wait for a single question to be asked in the press conference after the game, just saying he freaking blew it. And he told the team that, and he made a mistake, which you like. We covered a coach that didn't admit to mistakes and it was a problem. So you like that, but you hate the decision and you just hope they learn from it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was just, and that draft definitely did play on TV too, because it was like, oh my God, what happened to Greg Joseph on both of those kicks for sure? And they started talking about that. But yeah, it was just 3 of 16 on third down. And Jared Goff said after the game that they were treating third down. I mean, they were throwing short of the stick sometimes because they knew they were going for it on fourth down. So like you said, I mean, I love that four down approach too. And that's what got them two separate double digit leads. So to see that kicker come out for that, it's just like, it's still just shocking. It was a different level of shocking, blown Lions loss that we covered. And just on the topic of Campbell, like before you guys had even asked a question, that press from him bringing that up, I mean, for the I'm tired of hearing the apology crowd, I mean, you want that in a coach. I mean, to not even have a question to immediately admit, like, no, I messed that up. I cannot believe I did that. I want that one back. And then you've got Jared Goff openly saying, like, I wish I would have shook his shoulders and say, no, we're staying on the field here. I mean, it spoke to the youth of that coaching staff, like I said, because 4 of 6 on third down. I mean, what a weird game to go 3 of 16 on third down and control that game for most of the game. I mean, it's just a different level of Lions loss. They were 3 for 3 in the red zone. They did all the things right that they hadn't done right for a couple of years until the final just kind of, it just was uncharacteristic. And I think he learned his lesson there.
We've seen the Lions lose games in every possible way. And then renting new ones along the way. I mean, this is what we're accustomed to. This is what they do. And so I hear you when you say, you know, this is just another way to lose or a new level of losing. But I still walk away from a game like that encouraged. And I'm not a fan, so I understand why fans would be more upset this week. I have been surprised by some of the outrage this week and some of the shots that Campbell's taken. I mean, from my vantage point, he made a mistake. He copped to it immediately. But even when he's making this mistake that he's costing them the win, you still see already, Ben, the formula they're building, the culture they're building, the team they're building that they want to be about. And it's successful. I mean, they were taking it to Washington last week. They were taking it to Minnesota. And did they close it out? Of course not. And they've got real issues in the back end of their defense. You know, they got to sort some things out of safety where Tracy Walker is lost for the season. Amani Oruwariye, a cornerback, is playing like trash right now. 9 completions on 11 targets in that game against Kirk Cousins, 1 touchdown. And that's not even including the 6 penalties against them.
I mean, penalties.
It's a problem. They have problems on defense. It's not a perfect team. Like, I don't think anyone is expecting this team to go on some magical run to the Super Bowl, but it is a really good offensive team. You can see the identity coming together and you like the culture they're building, the aggressive style of football. I mean, and I wrote about this in my column after the game. It's so interesting to me, Ben, this contrast between Dan Campbell, the meathead, you know, this like national moniker that he's gotten. I mean, USA Today literally called him a meathead after the hiring because of only hearing kneecaps and absolutely nothing else. When there is a lot of substance and depth to what he's doing and how he's building, and and even strategically, and like these decisions to go for on fourth down, like they're aligned with the analytics. Every like all six of the fourth downs they went for improved the win probability for this team. It's not like he's just some gunslinger out there who's you know playing mad and just messing around. Like there's strategy to what they're doing, and it is aligned with the analytics, the mathematics. They're adding to their win probability. You know, he obviously got gun shy when it mattered most, and that's where he went awry. I mean, I can't really fathom why he abandoned the strategy that got him there. The only thing that really makes sense to me, and this is just pure speculation, is that maybe he's thinking in his head, I've already gone for it six times in this game. It's fourth and four. It's not like it was a fourth and one. Is it safer just to lay up here? And that was his thinking, almost maybe fearful of blowback he might have if they didn't catch it or whatever. But I mean, nothing else makes sense to me because that's not who he is. And like after that, here's betting he doesn't do it again.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the last time you'll see a decision like that happen. But to your point, I mean, I think people should still feel encouraged after this one too. And I think that's kind of what I was getting at with a different level of loss, is that they found a way to lose in ways that we've seen them lose before, but it's still encouraging. The defense still, I mean, like you said, replacing Tracy Walker on the back end is a giant, giant issue that they're going to have to figure out. Just, I mean, he's a highly productive guy. He's a team captain. He's a leader in that room. And I mean, you look to that last play of the game, Mike Hughes, Juju Hughes, a miscommunication. You know, they win at that. They win at that matchup for sure. And Walker not being out there, Campbell admitted, was a big thing. So it'll be really interesting to see how they replace that. I would say that's the injuries out of this one are the reason for discouragement, because you got to find a way to replace DeAndre Swift. I mean, Jamal Williams had his best game since he's been in Detroit. I thought 20 carries, 87 yards and a touchdown, two touchdowns. Got flagged for one too many hip thrusts. And but I think even with St. Brown hobble too, Josh Reynolds stepped up. I mean, they tried to get it going with DJ Chark, but it just didn't happen. But Reynolds had a really good game. Six catches, 96 yards on 10 targets. There are reasons for encouragement here. I mean, they had to play around with their defensive line more. Lim McNeil played on the outside more. They moved people around. I mean, there is reason for optimism for sure. I mean, Alex Anzalone just delivered his two best games in Detroit back-to-back. Like, Jeff Okuda, that reclamation project. There is reason for encouragement for sure. And you talked to Okuda recently, so I'll let you take that one. But I think that's, like, the biggest reason for encouragement, especially with Walker out and Imani playing disastrous right now, is just the rise of Jeff Okuda.
I thought coming into the season, Ben, that Jeff Okuda was the single biggest wild card on this team. And I didn't know if he was going to be great or bad or somewhere in between coming off the Achilles. But the thing with Jeff is, like, he was so good in college. I mean, like, historically locked down in college. So you know it's in him. But he missed so much time his first 2 years. He was trash when he was out there. At some point, I just feared that he was going to lose who he was, the dominant guy. That at some point, I think you just get so displaced from who you were that you are no longer that guy. And I was fearful that with how much time he had missed, and not just games, but practices too. I mean, that moment maybe was drawing near for Jeff Okuda, and that this was going to be a big year for him. And man, he has gone out there and played really well. I asked him once too, because he wasn't that good in training camp, at least to start. The first few weeks were pretty rough. He was splitting time with Will Harris, if that tells you how rough it looked. And he was bad on the first day of joint practices when we were down there in Indianapolis. Bad. Him and Imani both. And the next day, you were watching the offense, I was watching the defense. And Jeff Okuda was really good. I mean, really good on the second day of joint practices. And he was pretty good in the exhibition after that. And really, he's been on an upward trajectory since. And I remember asking him going into the season if that was like a turning point for him. And he's like, yeah, like he basically said that like he was embarrassed by day one of joint practices. And he made a resolution just to be that guy, just to be that guy, the guy that he was, a consistent guy that you can count on. And we've seen it, man. And we see him every day in the locker room, like pretty much every day we're in the locker room for 45 minutes. And he is just sitting at his locker watching film. It sounds like a cliche, but like guys are like watching TV, playing pool, doing other things. And Jeff Okuda is sitting in his locker watching film. And I asked him about it last week. And yeah, he's like, you know, I'm just watching everything because, you know, he had missed so many reps. And he's watching film of himself, guys that he likes. Like last week, he was watching film right before I talked to him, his rookie film going up against Justin Jefferson. And it was a bit of a bloodbath. I mean, Kirk Cousins had almost a perfect passer rating throwing at Jeff Okuda that day. And that day was like Dalvin Cook ran for like 1,000 yards. So they didn't throw that much. But when they did go to the air, they picked on Jeff Okuda more than anybody. But now you're seeing him play really well. And I caught up with him last week about it a little bit. And you could just hear the confidence and the way that he spoke and the way he looked you in the eye and the way he has so much confidence in himself right now and the way he's playing. And then he went out there in Minnesota and he was traveling with Justin Jefferson. I haven't seen a Lions cornerback travel with a receiver since Darius Slay. It's just not a thing you typically see. And a lot of times with most cornerbacks, they stay either on the left side or the right side, or obviously in the slot. The best ones will travel so you can neutralize a top wideout. They did that with Jeff Okuda against Justin Jefferson, which tells you all you need to know about their confidence level right now with where Okuda's game is at. And they did have a safety shading over the top. So they were still aligning the defense toward Justin Jefferson. So it's not like Okuda was on an island. And I know the stats are getting thrown around, 3 catches. I think it was 16 yards for Jefferson with Okuda in coverage. And that looks outstanding for Okuda. He did have help from the defense. And some of that help, I think, led to some of the other mistakes we saw on the other side of the field with Thielen and Osborne and so forth. But you can't take away how well Jeff Okuda is playing these days, Ben. And it's been a huge lift for a defense that really has a lot of issues, particularly in the back end.
Yeah, Tracy Walker confirmed that ruptured Achilles earlier this week. And we kind of talked about that for a minute earlier. But just, I mean, it's tough to figure out how they're going to replace that. Because obviously Juju, who's got the first rep at it, they've got a third-round rookie in Kirby Joseph, who they've described as a project. And I don't really see him getting reps back there yet. And then it's Melifonwu. I mean, he made the switch from cornerback to safety this year, and he still hasn't repped. He was inactive again. I asked Dan Campbell at his presser on Monday afternoon in Allen Park, and he said, he's close. We're going to see if we can get him going this week. So there's some growing concerns on the back end. You hear it in my voice. It's kind of like, oh, crap, they were already showing cracks in that secondary, and then you lose the leader on the room, a highly productive guy like Tracy Walker, had just played himself into such a positive light after that terrible, terrible 2020 on and off the field, got that extension. And it's been a bad stretch of guys getting extensions here and then going down with Achilles injuries or high draft pick. There have been a lot of Achilles injuries and stuff like that, but replacing Tracy Walker, that's not easy. Deshaun Elliott has been playing pretty well against the run and stuff like that, but it's so hard to replace Tracy Walker. And then you start to think about how much time Elliott's missed over the last 3 years. And it's like, my goodness, they got to figure that out, and they got to figure it out fast. And they've got some raw options back there. So what do you take on the safety situation? Because that's got to be a growing concern going forward.
Well, I don't know how much safety experience you have, but I think you're next on the call list. Bad. And, the options are basically Juju Hughes, who, like, I don't know what planet he was on for the last touchdown, but like no one was pointing the finger at him. But when you watch the tape, there's no one else it could have been. I mean, Mike Hughes was covering Osborne, hands him off to Juju Hughes, and Juju Hughes is just not there. You're up by 6 in the final minute. Like, the one thing you can't do is let somebody get behind you when they're at the 28-yard line, and that's exactly what they did. So that's Juju Hughes. That's like your top option at this point. And then Kirby Joseph, Ifeatu Melifonwu are the next two guys, and they've combined for 0 defensive snaps this year. And both of them have moved to safety in the last 2 years. So it's not good. It wouldn't surprise me to see them go sign a guy, a veteran of some kind, just to have another safety blanket there. But it's a problem, and you've got more injuries on offense too going forward as we look forward to, you know, with DeAndre Swift probably just reading some tea leaves. You know, if you speak Dan Campbell, you can hear him saying that he's not going to play until after the bye. That's probably the plan at this point. Amon Ross St. Brown also left the game briefly against Minnesota because of an ankle injury, and we'll see his status going forward. It's not a long-term injury, but it could be something that limits him in practice, perhaps holds him out. At this point, Swift and St. Brown are your two most indispensable offensive pieces besides Jared Goff. And St. Brown has played so well. And you can see where this is going, right? I'm trying to queue up our interview because it was a great chat with Ray Agnew, the assistant GM, about what makes this guy so good. But I guess before we get into that, man, Ben, like the Amon-Ra St. Brown experience, what has that been like for you just watching? I mean, what he's doing is nuts. Like, fourth round pick, 112th overall pick. Like, he's got the most catches in the league since last December besides Cooper Kupp. I mean, it's just remarkable the things that he's doing and really like helping this team stay afloat through some hard times.
He is, absolutely. I mean, he was the main reason for the boost in that passing attack down the stretch. And I mean, he just hasn't tapered off at all this year. Cause I mean, even with him like limping off the field in Minnesota last week, I'm still sitting here shocked that he didn't get to 8 catches for the 9th game in a row. I mean, what he did on that 8-game stretch is just unbelievable. And what he's done this season is just, this is a guy that got passed on that fell so far in the draft. And he's already got 23 catches, 253 yards, and 3 touchdowns. They're trying to find out ways to get him the rushing attack. But I just remember last year thinking there's just something different about this dude. Like you said with Ray, he just kind of carried himself as a veteran right from the get. There was just something different about him. And then, boom, he popped in that Minnesota game. He caught the game-winning touchdown. And you just kind of felt like, okay, there's something more. This isn't just a slot receiver. This guy's a pit bull. He's an absolute pit bull. I've heard it so many times. That's how I refer to him, too. I mean, my God, he was a lead blocker on a 4th-and-1 run last week. That you just don't see receivers doing that. So I just think, he's a legit star. He's a top playmaker. He's a key piece to this offense moving forward, then, now, and forever. And it's just like, he just has helped kind of set the identity for this team. Like, you think about guys they want to represent the Detroit Lions and under Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, and it's Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's just helped set this identity, and he's got some real national buzz potential long-term as a superstar.
He's a killer. That's what he is. There's a DNA in him that's different. We saw it last year, and I referenced it in my interview with Agnew, but just the way he attacks practice every day, every rep, it's workmanlike. I mean, I'm trying to think of like a guy to compare it to, and there's not a great apples-to-apples comparison, but maybe like a Danny Amendola or something like that, like just a fierce competitor. And everyone's a fierce competitor in a game, but to do it every day, through training camp and through practice, it's just a tough thing to do. And I remember the first moment where I saw it. I mean, he's a 112th overall pick, and it's the first padded practice, and he's going at it. He's fighting with somebody. I forget who it was. Maybe Melifonwu.
Yeah, I think it was.
And, and then a day or two later, he's fighting again, and this time with Jeff Okuda, a third overall pick. I mean, Okuda are going at it. And I'm like, man, this is different. This guy brings something completely different. Like, he's on a different planet when it comes to intensity, you know, to use the kids lingo, the dog inside him. That's what they say. And actually, I caught up with Chase Lucas this past week in the locker room. And I wrote about it already a little bit when I was writing about St. Brown and some of the streaks he had going on. Chase Lucas goes way back with Amon-Ra St. Brown because Chase Lucas played at Arizona State. St. Brown obviously played at USC. They played against each other in 2020 in the season opener, and it was a delayed season opener because of COVID. So it's November, and Arizona State is coming off a losing season in the Pac-12. USC is nationally ranked. Arizona State's a huge underdog, and they're winning by like 2 touchdowns against USC. And then USC scored a couple of late touchdowns to win the game in the end. And he's emotional. And that was the first time he remembered seeing the dog inside St. Brown. And I've actually got the audio queued up. This is Chase Lucas, Lions rookie cornerback, talking about that moment.
You know what I mean? People say, oh, he's not fast enough, but he really is fast enough, you know? Just because he can't run a fast 40 doesn't mean that he's fast enough on the field. So I feel like a lot of people overlooked him. You know, everybody from the West Coast knew exactly what the type of receiver he was. Like you say, he's not the fastest, but he's sneaky fast somehow, you know? Yeah. He's definitely one of the strongest dudes you're going to play against. So,
yeah, pound for pound.
Man. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think the pure thing about it with him is he's just a dog, man. He got that dog in his chest. He's from the West Coast. He got a little swag to him. And I think, like, he carries himself with a very high manner.
When's the first time you saw that dog in him?
First time I saw that dog in him was 2020, Arizona State versus USC. First game of the season, man. It was, like, November. We played a late game, or early morning game. And he was just coming back-to-back plays, man, just catching a hitch, taking a 10, 15 yards, taking a curl, man, getting another 10, 15 yards. And the time I remember him being the real dog was at the end of the game, man, and they came back from a touchdown. And at the last second, and I'm in tears, man. I'm like sick to my stomach. He pointed at me and laughed. He said, "Aha, 24." And I was like, "Okay." After that, I'll never forget that. So, yeah, one of the good stories I got to get out with him for sure.
I think you could hear me in the background. Like, I was just laughing my ass off. I don't remember the last time I laughed that hard in the locker room. It was just such a good classic story about the competitor we've seen in Amon-Ra.
It just lines up, because I remember after they drafted Chase Lucas and we talked to St. Brown, we asked about playing Chase Lucas, and he was like, "Yeah, I showed up as a freshman. He was already a junior, and then I left, and he was there for another 3 years." So it's just,
he's a killer. That's what it is. Like, there's a different DNA inside him, and there's an instinct. Like, I remember in Seattle last year, right? The Lions are like, I don't know, what are they, 3-12, 1 or something like that at that point? I don't know, something terrible. Or no, I guess they won one more game at the end. So maybe 2-12-1, whatever. I'm bad with math, but they're way out of it. Seattle is too. It's a meaningless game between teams with like 5 combined wins or something like that. And St. Brown goes off. Course, you know, it's part of his long streak here. He had, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like 8 catches, 120 yards maybe receiving, a bunch more on the ground, scored on the ground, scored through the air, scored on a 2-point conversion. I mean, he did everything. And I remember catching up with him, and not even like in the interview room, I forget why it happened this way, but it was in like the cement, I don't know, hallway, I guess, that's like right next to where the team bus is. And we're talking, and he did what he did after the Washington game, where he's like, "Well, you know, there's someone on that sideline. Like, you know, I think Seattle took somebody ahead of me, right? I'm not sure how many catches he had. I don't know. You guys probably know." And you're just like laughing to yourself, because he knows exactly who Dwayne Eskridge is, the Western Michigan wideout taken in the, I believe, the second round. He had one catch that day, if memory serves. And Amon-Ra, I mean, he went bonkers. And it's the same thing we saw after the Washington game, right? Like, he just goes crazy. He had 175 yards from scrimmage, led the Lions in rushing, led the Lions in receiving, you know, a couple touchdowns. When Washington was coming back in that game, Amon-Ra answered right back, including with that 58-yard end around him. He was just fabulous in all the ways. And after the game, he's like, "Well, you know, Dimey Brown was on the other sideline. Washington took him before me. I don't know how many catches he had, but..." And again, it's just the ultimate troll job, because he knows exactly how many catches he had. He had 0 catches because he played one offensive snap. It's just amazing to see what Amon-Ra is doing in terms of the production. But I think what, for me, really separates him and gets me excited for his future in Detroit is this dog mentality, this killer instinct, because I don't know the last guy that I've covered that quite had that in Detroit. But, you know, it almost reminds me, and I'm not whatsoever comparing the players, but Tom Brady, you know, just in terms of killer instinct. And again, I mean, well, who knows what St. Brown will become, but just that kind of like cold-bloodedness is something I just haven't seen really from a Lions player before.
No, I've never seen anything like this. Like, the kid, like you said, he's just an absolute killer. And, you know, it feels like he's got even more room to grow as they figure out how to use him on the outside, switching him inside and getting him on the ground going. Because, I mean, it's just like, it's wild. 4th-and-1 lead blocker, and it's somebody you're going to target 12, 13 times a game. I mean, it's everything Dan Campbell could wish for in a wide receiver, I think.
They found him at 112th overall, which is crazy. Lasts to the third day of the draft. And now he's you know, one of the most productive receivers in the NFL. And if he keeps it up at some point, probably this year, people will start talking about him as one of the best receivers in the NFL. And it's really a remarkable thing that the Lions found him so far in the draft, which makes me really excited to introduce our next guest here on the podcast, Ray Agnew, assistant GM for the Lions, a critical component of the team that was scouting Amon-Ra St. Brown, helped them find him. And when they went into day 3, Ben, he was atop their board. So we get into all that with Ray Agnew, and hear that interview with.
Curious just about what the evaluation process was like. Obviously a guy who was overlooked by a lot of people in the league, undervalued, and now feasting, playing really well. Okay. So I just wanted to get your perspective. Damon said you were one of the key guys that was in on that evaluation.
Well, The first thing for me when I look at a receiver, I try to see what he do when he's not getting the ball. And this guy was unbelievable. Like, you knew, you could see his passion for the game. You could see his love for the game. He approached run blocking just as strong as he did running routes and catching the football, you know. And then when one of his guys caught the ball, he was looking to go make a block and help him run, help him get in the end zone. So to me, that guy, that told me he's a football player first and then a receiver. So that stood out to me first and foremost, what he did when he wasn't getting the ball. I mean, you can judge a receiver off of what he does when he know he's getting the ball, you know. But and then on top of that, the guy's a great route runner, you know. Tough as nails, passionate, catch the ball well. I mean, I can go on and on too, man.
And we've seen it all in yeah, Detroit, too. Yeah. Were you mostly watching all 22 film of this guy? Were you flying into L.A. or wherever USC was playing to scout him? How exactly did the process of scouting
him? I was just watching it on tape, you know, video, you know, just watching it in my office. And obviously at the time, we first started evaluating him. Me and Brad was still with the Rams, so hey, we were down the street from the kid. But, you know, so, but you noticed him years before, too,
right,
before he was eligible for the draft.
So, like, the first thing you mentioned was the blocking.
Oh, it's awesome.
And we've, and we've seen it in Detroit, too. He's a killer.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting. When I was getting ready for this interview, I checked out his scouting profile on NFL.com, NFL Network. And they called him very little grit in run blocking.
Very little grit.
Very little grit and run blocking was the write up on Amon-Ra. There's two references to issues with his blocking. I'm curious what you saw, which obviously stood in contrast to what they saw.
Well, I mean, I saw him block a guy in the sideline before on the bench, you know. So yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's somebody else's opinion. No, he didn't have a problem with blocking at all.
Which game was that where you saw him?
No, I can't remember the game.
Yeah. But, I was going back. I talked to Chase Lucas in the locker room. This week about Amon-Ra, because they went back to, because Chase Lucas was obviously at Arizona State. They played against each other in 2020 in the season opener. And Chase told me a great story about how they're coming off the field. You know, Arizona State had gotten beaten right at the end of that game. And Amon-Ra basically laughed in his face when Chase was crying. Like, Chase was like an emotional moment. And Amon-Ra laughed in his face. And Chase said that was kind of the moment when he first saw that dog in him.
Yeah.
But I went back and watched a little bit of that game, and I saw Amon-Ra do exactly what you talked about, where it was Jack Jones, the cornerback from Arizona State, blocked him 7 yards behind the USC sideline, dumped him.
He didn't have a problem blocking that. I mean, that stood out to me right away with him. You know, dude's an outstanding football player, man. You know, and for me, the passion that he plays with and the love for the game. If you find a player that got love for the game, you got a chance. You got a pretty good football player because he's going to work at it. He's a pro. He works at his craft. He's always worked at his craft. He works to get better. He's never satisfied, you know. So he's just going to get better and better, in my opinion.
Was there a moment in the evaluation, Ray, where, I mean, you're looking at hundreds of guys in the draft process. Was there a moment with Amon-Ra where you're watching the tape and studying this guy, and a light flicked on, you're like, this guy could fit with what we're doing?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, like I said, the toughness, what he did, you know, when he wasn't getting the ball, that stood out to me first and foremost. But then the route running and the ability to make the tough catch in the crowd, you know, the contested catch, you know, and take a hit, you know. Yeah. So, and that's run, and his run after catch is another thing that's underrated also. But yeah, I would say just the route running and ability to catch the football stood out. But the toughness and the what he did when he wasn't getting the ball, it just stood out to me.
Yeah, and it's carried over to here. Yeah. He's just been so good, so fast here. And I mean, we're out here every day, and you can see even when he was a rookie, he looked like a veteran.
Yeah.
The way he approached the game, the way he approached every day of practice, rep at practice. And I'm curious, Ray, your perspective on you know, we saw this stuff in college too. We're seeing it now in the pros, and he's, you know, I mean, he's leading the league in so many different categories now. He's among the leaders, and yet he fell to you guys in the fourth round. So I'm just curious to get your perspective on why you think maybe he fell as far as he did, like why he was maybe undervalued as much as he was, and then why he's been able to obviously continue to do what he was doing.
Well, I mean, the first question I'll say, hey, you know, this thing is built off measurables, and maybe he didn't run as fast as people thought he would run, or whatever. Whatever the case was, you know, I really don't know the whole why he lasted to the fourth round. I'm just glad he lasted, and it was there for us, you know. So you can say, you know, maybe he didn't run as fast as people thought he was going to run, but I don't base anything off of 40, especially, you know, this is the football player first, you know, and he passed that test every time you turn the tape on, you know. So I just love the kid, though.
Yeah. Some guys play faster than they run at 40,
no question.
Right?
No question.
I asked him this week about the speed thing, and he had said that, that you know, you're not running a 40, like, in a game. And some guys can just play ball, and some people can scout ball, and they know it when they see it.
Exactly. He's exactly right. Yeah. Forget the 40. He's a football player. a football player, and a darn good one, too. I played with some great wide receivers, you know, in my career. And the two that stands out is Torrey Holden and Isaac Bruce. And I'm not putting them in, you know, that category yet. But I would just say that he works the way they did. You know, he works at his craft. He works at it every day. And they did. They worked every single day at their craft, you know, so. Yeah. Not putting him in those.
You know,
you're talking about a Hall of Famer and one that's soon to be a Hall of Famer. But.
Yeah, so you're talking about the drive he has for the game, the physicality he has, what he brings every single day, the, you know, like what Chase Lucas said, the dog inside him, right? This killer instinct that we've seen come out. Those are, for lack of a better word, intangibles. They're not something you can measure with a stopwatch or something like that. So I know Brad's put a big emphasis on intangibles since coming here, and you have as well with him, even going back to your days with the Rams. I'm curious how that applied with Amon-Ra. How did you measure or look at his intangibles?
I mean, they were off the chart. I mean, they popped off the tape. You couldn't help it. I mean, the way he played with passion. He played with, you could tell he loved to play the game. And it wasn't hard to see. I mean, it just popped off the tape. As soon as you turn the tape on, he's like, man, this kid's a monster, man. You know, he's tough. He's passionate, man. Yeah. And he goes after it every play. So, yeah. I mean, that was that. To me, the intangibles stood off. They popped off the tape right away, you know.
Mm-hmm. He's told the story a few times about day two, right? Day two of the draft, he thinks he's going to go. Like, I don't think he had an expectation for round one, but he thought he's going day two. NFL put the cameras in his house on day two. He was having a party and didn't get the call, and he watched however many names come off the board of his position and not him, and he was so pissed that he went to a jugs machine that night and was just catching hundreds of balls off a jugs machine. I'm curious what you were thinking that night going into day three, knowing he was still out there and how much he was going to fit what you guys were trying to
do. We were just hoping we could get him. Because we both loved him.
You and Brad.
Everybody did, not just me and Brad. The entire department, we all loved the kid. And fortunately, he was still there and we was able to get him, you know.
What was the conversations like, you know, night two when, because Brad said before you guys were kind of targeting him going into day three. I'm curious what those conversations were as the draft was turning to from day two to day three. Mm-hmm. What was the conversation like around Amon-Ra St. Brown?
Well, I would just say they were positive. I'm not going to go into all the details, but I would just say that they were very positive. We all wanted him as a Lion, and we knew he would fit exactly what we do. You know, so,
were you surprised to see him go as late as he did?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
All right, I'm just going to wrap up with I wanted to do. I looked at the scouting profile on NFL Network's scouting thing, and some of the stuff really applied. Some of the weaknesses of his game I thought were pretty interesting. Just wanted to get your quick reactions to those. They said play strength might need an upgrade. What do you think of Amon-Ra coming out of college in terms of play strength?
I had no problem with that.
Yeah.
Play strength.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys. He drove people into the ground as a blocker. So
it's all over the team, too. Has issues securing catchable throws underneath. Was that an issue for you?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. We talked about the very little grit in the running game. Black stride to get to open up and hit a second gear. Was top-end speed a concern for you guys?
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say top-end. A guy like him, you know, you're not gonna base your total evaluation on how fast he runs. Because he's a guy that's gonna get open underneath. He's gonna be quarterback friendly. He's gonna be a guy that quarterback can trust. So you look at all that stuff first. And, you know, he's not a 4-3 guy, for whatever. He's not that, but he's fast. He's fast enough to get open and catch the football and get yards after that. So
yeah. They gave him an overall scouting grade. Eventually, could be an average starter in the NFL or maybe a backup.
Well, I mean, he's proven that wrong. So, I mean, yeah. No, I didn't think that. I thought he could be a starting slot right away. So,
Ragnar, thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
This has been Ben Raven and Kyle Mikey of MLive's Detroit Lions. Thank you for listening to the Dungeon of Doom, an MLive Detroit Lions podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Acast, Apple, Spotify, Google. Like I said, wherever you get them and listen to them, make sure to subscribe to the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks again.